You know why I'm happy? I'm pretty sure there are lots of people in America who are happy this morning. We are going to, even though it's No Politics Friday, and, you know, we try to keep things light on a Friday, and we'll get there. We've got Mark Mdluli joining us. SAFTA award-winning Mark Mdluli joining us a little bit later on. But before we get to that, I want to cross to a friend of mine in the US of A, where they've had an absolutely historic election. And I think it's probably appropriate for anybody who's coming down from that to just get some perspective on things. Might not be such a bad idea. I'm thrilled to be joined by Joel Pollack, who is the senior editor-at-large at Breitbart News. He's also their in-house counsel. He was born here in South Africa, so he knows what we're like, but he also, importantly, knows what America is like. And he graduated from Harvard College, Harvard Law School. He worked with Andrew Breitbart, who was an absolute mensch, and he transformed Breitbart News. He also authored several books, including a book called How Trump Won. And I'm wondering, Joel, if you've thought about doing How Trump Won and just putting a 2 at the end of it and maybe reissuing this self-same book. On that note, let's talk to Joel Pollack from Breitbart News. And Joel, it's lovely to have you on the show. I'm sorry we had these difficulties connecting with you. It seems like everything's okay now. How are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm taking a 24-hour break, which is why I'm at a little cabin in Central California, but feeling very good and just letting everything sink in.
Listen, I'm sure you have very little sleep over the last few days, huh?
Yeah, it's been very exciting. Late returns, and they're still counting here in California, so things keep happening. But yeah, just taking a little break before jumping back into the fray.
Well, I mean, give us an idea, give us some perspective on this. Usually on a Friday, we don't do a lot of politics, but I really wanted to, with as much of a long window as possible, look at this week and try and place it in terms of how significant these numbers are, how significant this election result is, what this means in terms of the House, the Senate, the White House, the popular vote, because it does feel to me like this is a major ground shift.
Yeah, this is an incredible result. First of all, because Donald Trump was supposed to be completely gone by now in the imagination of Democrats and the media. They prosecuted him for essentially baseless crimes. They smeared him. They tried to destroy him financially. They thought he would disappear. And instead, he came back.
Some people actually tried to kill him.
Yeah, they tried to kill him. The list goes on, but he persevered and he fought and he attracted more and more support. And it simply is the greatest political comeback in American history. There hasn't been a president who served one term and then lost and then served another term again since Grover Cleveland did it in 1892. And it was not a similar circumstance. In those days, the Electoral College and the voting were really sort of a haphazard affair. And in this era, it's just unheard of for something like that to happen. You lose a presidential election, you wander off into the wilderness. And in his case, you wander off to jail or maybe worse. But the more they persecuted him, the more support he built. That's one thing. The other thing is the coalition that voted for Donald Trump is so different from the traditional Republican voting coalition. Donald Trump won Hispanic men. That is to say, people from Central and Latin America who historically have voted for Democrats. I think Mitt Romney won 27% of the Hispanic vote. That was the Republican nominee in 2012. Donald Trump got a majority, at least of the men, of the male Hispanic vote, and he got a lot of the women as well. He also got a significant chunk of the Black American vote, not a majority by any stretch. I think it was somewhere in the high teens, maybe low 20s. They're still counting, but that's something like double the typical Republican result. And that's new. That's absolutely new in American politics. There is a kind of realignment where the Republicans are becoming the party really of the working class in America, whereas the Democrats are becoming more and more the party of elites.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, what you're talking about is almost a difference at an individual level, that the issues that were affecting people are issues which were fairly universal, but that the Democrats' bet on going with identity politics was wrong. You mean that Al Sharpton telling Hispanic men they're misogynists and Barack Obama berating Black men and saying, you have to vote for Kamala, otherwise you're probably a sexist. You don't think that had the desired effect?
No, it really didn't. I mean, people don't take that seriously anymore. You know, it's unpleasant to hear those things being said, but those were some of the nicer things that were said. The Democrats and the media called Trump Hitler, and they called his supporters Nazis and fascists. You know, it's kind of extreme, but it became almost a joke. And people just decided to ignore it. They just tuned it out. It was just noise. And the reality is that inflation in this country, which is higher than it has been historically, it's not where it was a couple of years ago in the first years of Biden's presidency. It was up near double digits, which is very unusual for the United States. It's still a little higher than usual now, but the real problem is that they've had to raise interest rates to bring prices down. And when you do that, as in South Africa as well, you raise the rates on everything. So people are not just finding it more difficult to afford the prices at the grocery store, but they also have credit card bills that they cannot pay. And something like a third of Americans have no more credit whatsoever. There's no ability to borrow. So people are coming to the end of the month and running out of money, and they're unable to buy basic things. And that's not something that most Americans are used to in a very prosperous country. So it didn't really matter what Kamala Harris and Joe Biden said. The reality was that people could not afford ordinary things anymore, and they voted for change. There were polls that showed that people made up their minds about who they were going to vote for in the summertime, meaning before September. So the last 2 weeks of the campaign were essentially just additional, fighting over the few remaining votes. But more than 80% of the voters had already decided by the end of the summer, that is to say 2 months before the election. So this was really about the economy and everything else the Democrats did to pile on. You mentioned the identity politics, the name calling, saying that Trump was a danger to democracy. All of that just either was ignored or it motivated his voters to turn out in even greater numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I am enjoying the meltdowns, though. We'll talk in a moment about who the biggest losers in this election are. But just in case you joined us in the last few minutes, this is Joel Pollack we're talking to. He's in his cabin in the woods trying to get away from the politics of the last couple of days. He is the senior editor at large at Breitbart News. And I think this is probably a good time because you're at Breitbart and you guys have been one of the winners in terms of being able to build trust and credibility with an audience in a time where the mainstream media really have just shattered theirs against the rocks. I mean, everybody was more excited to watch Joy Reid on MSNBC and The View on ABC and a bunch of other shows where people have basically been propagandists for the Democrats over the last couple of years, to the extent that no one takes them seriously. The only reason people would have tuned in this week was to watch them melt down. And I don't know whether you'd agree with me. It seems to me the biggest loser in this election is not Kamala Harris. It's probably the media.
The media lost. The traditional media lost. But the new media, the podcasting world, was the big winner. I mean, Trump went on all kinds of podcasts. Joe Rogan was the big one. But he went on tiny podcasts many people had never heard of. Mm-hmm. And he made himself accessible to people who run very low budget operations and who simply have an audience, and he wanted to reach that audience. And that was very successful. It wasn't actually the first time someone had done it. There was a politician that you mentioned earlier named Barack Obama who also did the same thing, although he did it when he was already president. And when he did it, it was really an avoidance strategy. He wanted to avoid the mainstream media. He didn't want to answer questions. But with Trump, it was a way of reaching non-traditional voters, people who don't usually participate in politics. A lot of people who were voting for the first time chose Trump. It's very unusual for young people, for example, to favor the Republican candidate. But there were important parts of the country like Wisconsin where young people actually voted for the Republican, which is, again, just it doesn't happen. Yeah. And usually the Republican is some stodgy old white guy and young people want the dynamic young new generation, as Kamala Harris put it. But Trump just never ceases to be interesting, and he goes on these non-traditional platforms and talks to people. And in the end, the Democrats couldn't compete with that because their strategy was to hide Kamala Harris from the media for a long time, hoping they could control the message. And by the time they rolled her out there to face interviews, she was completely unprepared, and she often gave terrible answers. I mean, you mentioned The View. I've actually been on The View, and they, you know, they have four Democrats and one Republican. And you have to go in there. It's like going into the lion's den, but you have to go in there with a bit of a sense of humor to survive it all. It was actually one of my favorite media appearances. But he was a friendly audience, and they asked her a very simple question. They were trying to be helpful, and they said, "How are you different from Joe Biden?" And she just said, "I can't think of anything. Nothing comes to mind." And that was it.
Joel, let's just quickly talk about the actual numbers here, because I know that there are a few places, and you mentioned this at the beginning, that have not yet reported. We're waiting for a few votes to trickle in California. There's some other states, some congressional districts that still have to report. For South Africans and for people who are watching and listening to us all over the world, how big a deal is it that the Republicans are taking the White House here with Donald Trump? The Senate is now Republican majority. I think only by 3 or 4 seats, but it's enough, right? Because it's only 100 senators. Congress looks like it's going to be safely in the hands of the Republicans, too. The most important, I think, is that the Democrats have always said when a Republican has won in the past, oh, but you didn't get the popular vote. And that hasn't been a thing
Right.
since what, like 2000 and like George W. Bush, 2004, I think it was, or even earlier, that the last
Yeah.
time a Republican won the popular vote. This is. This turnout and this swing is massive. There isn't really any wiggle room for someone who would like to debate that there's something fishy going on in terms of results here. It's kind of a clean sweep for Trump.
It is a clean sweep, and the significance is that for the first 2 years at least, he will have a relatively free hand in proposing legislative ideas that can move through Congress and become law. It's not a completely free hand because we have procedural rules in the Senate that give the minority party quite a lot of power to block legislation they don't like. So the Senate is usually more moderate, and the House of Representatives is on a knife edge. The margin that Republicans will have, and I do think they'll win the House, but the margin will be just a few seats. So there will be some negotiation that goes on. Democrats are not completely out of the picture, but they won't be able to control what gets a vote. Whichever party has the majority controls which things come to the floor for a vote. They won't be able to block Trump's administrative and executive appointments and judicial appointments because the Republican majority in the Senate, which reviews all those appointments, will simply vote for whoever he nominates to get them up and running. So it does allow him to govern without hindrance, at least for the first 2 years. Now, these things don't last forever. Democrats will come back in 2 years, and there will be a lot of places where they are going to do better than they did in 2024. Just that's the nature of these things. And they'll have a chance to be competitive again in 2028, but they have to reinvent themselves. It's clear that the country is tired of left-wing policies. Here in California, in San Francisco and Oakland, which are part of the same metropolitan region across the San Francisco Bay, voters who are typically very left-wing, they threw out their left-wing governments. Now, they're not about to elect conservative Republican governments, but they elected more moderate Democrats because those cities, San Francisco and Oakland, are being overrun by crime. They have giant signs on, if you go to San Francisco to the car rental agency, there are giant signs painted on the elevator doors as you take the lift to the garage. And they say, "Don't leave anything in the car, lock your car." You wouldn't even see that in South Africa, which has a higher crime rate typically than in the United States. But there's such a lot of petty theft and shoplifting in San Francisco and Oakland that locals have simply had enough, and they've thrown out these far left-wing prosecutors who don't focus on fighting crime, but rather focus on what they call criminal justice reform, basically putting people back on the streets in the hopes that they'll get better somehow. There's no real law enforcement. So people are either moving away or deciding they're going to stay and vote the people out. So that's what's happening. There's been a shift in every way in this election towards the right. It doesn't mean the whole country is right wing, but even the far left is moving a little bit further to the center, at least in terms of office holders. And so it is a significant moment, and I hope the Democrats will do some thinking and come back and be competitive in 2026 and 2028, but competitive with new ideas and hopefully better leadership.
Well, okay, let's look at something you and I both care about, international relations and the world at large. I just see a lot of real like meltdown, whining, complaining. I mean, I was watching CNN yesterday because that's kind of all we get in terms of cable news channels out of the US here. I try to go online and watch a little bit of everything so I can get a good taste. But most people would have watched that already yesterday. They're going on with headlines like Trump's chilling effect on the climate change agenda. I mean, he isn't even president yet. And they're already to lay the groundwork. I see them talking about, yeah, this is going to be terrible for Ukraine. It's going to be terrible for Israel. It's going to be terrible for Africa. I mean, is this just hysteria?
Yes. And by the way, you mentioned the chilling effect he'll have on climate change. Well, that's great. That's another problem he's solved, right? Because if the world's getting warmer.
By the way, I saw that Hezbollah have asked for a ceasefire, and so did the Houthis. So he's already solved those two problems before he's even in the Oval Office. Very good. Well done, Trump.
Look, there's something fascinating about this election which relates to foreign affairs. But in Michigan, which has a large Arab and Muslim population, Joe Biden and then Kamala Harris had a real problem because those communities were upset that the United States was still supporting Israel in some nominal way, at least. And they wanted an anti-Israel policy to come out of Washington, D.C. And even though Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were very critical of Israel, they weren't willing to cut Israel off completely. And in the end, those communities ended up voting for Trump, even though Trump is the most pro-Israel president in American history, because they trusted him to deliver peace. They looked at his record and they saw 4 years of peace in the Middle East when there was no war. And they also saw that he has a relationship with the prime minister of Israel, with Benjamin Netanyahu, in which Netanyahu respects Trump. Netanyahu doesn't listen to Biden. Biden would berate Netanyahu and Netanyahu would just go and do whatever he wanted anyway. There's a sense in which Netanyahu will listen to Trump. And if Trump is promising peace, the hope is among Arab and Muslim voters who care about this issue that Netanyahu will listen. And I think the Israelis are listening. They are talking about looking for a ceasefire in Lebanon. They're talking about looking for hostage deals in Gaza if they can still get them. And they're talking about trying to find some way to contain Iran rather than to escalate the war. The Israeli government knows that the best thing it could do to get along with Donald Trump is present him with calm on January 20th next year when he takes office so that he can sign some big peace deal and win the Nobel Prize or something if they deign to give it to him. But he doesn't want to come in with war raging around the world. Mm-hmm. And so in Ukraine and Russia, he's going to tell the parties they have to sit down at the table and negotiate. In the Middle East, he's telling the Israelis, do what you need to do to win, but get it done quickly because this can't go on. And I think he's just going to pull everybody together and say, all right, we have to find a way to sort this out. If you don't cooperate, there will be consequences. If Iran continues to fund terrorism, then he'll just tell Israel to do whatever it wants. But Donald Trump prefers to solve these problems through financial pressure and not through military pressure. And he did so with Iran. I mean, in the last year that he was president, I think Iran only earned something like $16 billion in oil revenues. And in the last few years, it's just shot up through the roof because Biden has eased all the sanctions enforcement and so on. So Iran has more money to send to these terrorist groups. And Donald Trump knows that money talks and people follow the money. And he's going to try to exert financial pressure on people who don't come and sit down and participate in the bargain. You have people panicking about what that means for Ukraine, for example. And they say, well, Ukraine's going to have to make territorial concessions and that's terrible and so forth. But the reality is that for the last year, there's been a stalemate, sort of like World War I. You know, there's been like a front line that never moves or doesn't move more than a few miles either way. And people are pouring billions and billions and billions of dollars into this war. And tens of thousands of people are being killed for no real gain on the ground. And when you have a stalemate like that, you always negotiate. I mean, that's the prime situation for negotiating. But the Biden administration, for whatever reason, could call it the military-industrial complex, you know, defense contractors getting wealthy from selling weapons. You could call it an old Cold War mentality that you can't give an inch to the Russians or whatever it is, or maybe a desire to avoid a kind of Second World War scenario where if you appease the dictator, he takes more land. I don't think Vladimir Putin's going to try any new military adventures anytime soon. I think he has learned his lesson and he has run out of soldiers. He's run out of money. And I think Trump realizes it's a prime opportunity now to finish the war, get that done, and then move on. Let the world move on, let Ukraine rebuild, and hopefully bring Russia back into the international system in some way so that there can be some kind of prosperity there and again, improved relations with the United States. We don't have to like Vladimir Putin or agree with what he does, but we do have some common interests.
Okay, so quickly, and this is casting a little bit into the future, but I know that you think about this stuff. It's not sexy. It's not going to make people sit up and fantasize. But I think for you and me, this is more exciting as the policy stuff. So what do you think he's going to do in his first couple of days in there? And I'm talking about things like the border, the economy, all these people he's got on his team. Where is he going to deploy someone like Tulsi Gabbard, like Bobby Kennedy, like Vivek Ramaswamy? What's he going to do with these people? Because he's got an incredible team of really, really experienced and brilliant people who don't come from politics. What's his transition team doing in the background now, as far as you and your sources can tell us?
Well, in the last few hours, he's appointed his chief of staff, who's a woman named Susie Wiles. And Susie Wiles was his campaign manager, very quiet woman, stayed in the background the entire time. And he obviously trusts her very, very deeply. And he has appointed her as chief of staff. She is the first female chief of staff of any White House. So much for the misogynistic Donald Trump. He has actually entrusted the running of his administration to this woman, Susie Wiles. And that's one person. So you mentioned Tulsi Gabbard and you mentioned Bobby Kennedy. Kennedy may run the Department of Health and Human Services. He's been given the job of completely overhauling public health in the United States. He wants to solve the problem of obesity, which is a big problem in the United States, and chronic disease. Mm-hmm. And he believes that it has to do with bad nutrition and all the different interest groups that are able to get certain drugs passed or certain nutritional requirements put into school lunchrooms, for example, not appropriate. So he wants to solve all that. But there are also so many people behind the scenes who've been working for the Trump campaign. And I have to tell you, when he won in 2016, it was with a ragtag army because nobody wanted to be anywhere near him. They all thought he was going to lose. And so when he won, it was with a handful of people. I mean, some of them were, you know, friends and colleagues of mine who were suddenly, you know, running the free world. And he didn't have professional staff around him. And as a result, he was forced to hire people who were actually opposed to his policies and who spent a lot of their time trying to undermine him. Even with that, he got a lot done. But this time, the campaign is very professional. He's got a lot of very highly skilled people. They've learned to avoid the limelight and to avoid some of the drama in the media, because anytime you poke your head above the parapet, they shoot at you. So he's got a lot of people you may not have heard of, but who are actually lined up to go into key positions. And, you know, like Susie Wiles, who was just she didn't go on cable news shows. David Plouffe, who's Kamala Harris's campaign manager, you know, he's something of a minor celebrity, but he was always on the Sunday morning shows. Susie Wiles is a new name for many Americans. And in fact, her father is known to Americans more than she is. He was a famous sports broadcaster. So comes from an interesting lineage. But, you know, she's an interesting pick, and I think she's an example of what you're going to see.
I love it. Joel, it's always good to pick your brain, and thank you for making yourself available to us, especially so late at night, your time. Enjoy a couple of hours of respite in the woods of California and get back in
there
so you can keep us updated. The editor at large at Breitbart News, he is Joel Pollack. It's a great pleasure to have you on the show, Joel. Thank you. The Gareth Cliff Show on The Real Network. On a Friday morning, it is a hell of a week. We even had some rain last night, which makes people in Gauteng a little bit happier because it means the air isn't so goddamn dry and everything around us isn't so dry and everything suddenly bursts into bloom. And I just think that we feel a little bit better because it's also, I saw some notification this week from like the neighborhood WhatsApp group. It's like level 1 water restrictions. I'm like, oh, we just got past the point where you were telling us we couldn't use electricity. Now you're going to tell us we can't use water.
We always have to have a struggle, Gareth.
How the hell are you, Mark and Fuli?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Jeez, dude, I don't know. You seem to have like the never-ending youth complexion or whatever the hell you've got going on here.
You know what it is, Gareth? I do think
you're having a lot of sex.
I do think, yeah,
that
does help. That does help. But I also
Oh, so you are? Okay,
yeah,
well done.
I mean,
good work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean,
it's no point doing comedy if you're not getting some sex.
There's no
right?
point looking like this if you're not going to have some sex. You know what I mean?
How are you?
I'm good. So to answer your statement, it's because I do things that young people do. You know, I sleep in.
That's beautiful.
I go out. I have sex. I do the things that young people do. And I moisturize in the morning.
Moisturize, that's the important thing.
It really is. Like, white people don't understand why black
ashiness.
Don't crack.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. You guys stay ashy because yeah. after you shower, Vaseline. You need to moisturize. Vaseline.
Vaseline. Camphor. Yeah. Camphor cream. Yeah. Ingrams.
Exactly.
That's the
exactly.
one. I know. Yeah, all man. Right. So, Mark, well done, first of all, on winning with a bunch of other people that SAFTA.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank
that
you
is a hell
much.
Of a thing. That's very, very nice. Well
it
done.
It is. It is. Thank you. You know, it was actually really a dream come true. I like to tell the story about, you know, when I first quit my job to actually come here and ask for a job. That's actually where it all started. So, actually, thank you. People don't sure, understand. Man. Like this, I remember when you were saying around that time that the reason why you gave so many young people that opportunity is because you knew there was talent, you knew there were great minds in South Africa who were able to do things, and you just gave us the platform, and there were so many
Well,
great
don't you
shows.
Remember all those people going, open up the industry?
Yes.
Like, there were a whole lot of people who were very, very unhappy that there were only a few people in South Africa who were getting all the jobs. I was like, yeah, because those are the only people you could trust to do the jobs.
Yeah.
It wasn't true that there wasn't talent, though. And I've always believed that that was an important thing that we need to do. And I'm afraid, like most media organizations, have just really let people down because they don't have jobs and they don't yeah. do training and they don't create opportunities for interns or any of that stuff. And I'm just glad that people like you, who are talented and are able to do amazing stuff, are doing it.
Thank
it's
you.
Great. Well done.
It comes from you. So when I quit my well job, done, I left during lunchtime to come to the Cliff Central studios and be like, guys, I'll wash dishes. I'll clean the floors. I'll be your Jane, my lad. Yeah, if you need me to
You
be.
Said so. But we didn't even make you do that stuff.
No,
so there's
you
no
gave
fun
me
at all.
Whole show.
I mean, like, without treading on too many toes here, you were like, I'll be your slave. Yeah, and I was like, we can't
no,
do
no,
that.
Actually,
Mark, we're not allowed to do that anymore.
We passed
you know?
That.
Yeah, I know.
But
very
then
good.
You guys are like, yeah, go for it. And that's where everything started, that along with the comedy. So I was saying, I went to sleep on one of those nights and I just quit my job and I was just about to get kicked out of my house. I didn't know that at the time, well, my dad's house. And then I had like dreams.
By the way,
about
props to your dad for threatening to kick you out.
No, he did the right thing.
Do you know how many people I know who are in their 30s who are still living in their parents' houses?
Yeah, it's deep.
I'm like, this is not good. This is embarrassing.
Especially our generation.
How are you ever going to get married when you're living in your parents' house?
How are you ever going to get laid? Like,
let's start there, right? Let's
from
just
the bus,
there.
I
yeah,
just
yeah,
go
yeah.
back
I
to
saw
my
the cars, yeah.
My mom's yeah. sleeping, though.
I saw the golf cart.
That's the early thing. So, yeah, it's a real issue that we're facing, but other than that, I was saying in that time when I was going to sleep, I had visions of what the dream would be, what it would look like, what it would feel like to walk up on stage and win an award.
Well, I've said this, the audience are going to hate me for this, but comedy is the hardest of all the performing arts,
yeah.
right? Because you really can just get taken to pieces by the audience and they don't give a shit. And that's right. You get up. It's kind of like our comment section
yeah.
in a way, except they're not actually in the room. It's much yeah. worse when they scream, you're a piece of shit from the audience.
Yeah,
But that is the baptism by fire. I reckon if you can survive, anybody who thinks they've got balls, right? Man or woman, I don't mean to gender this conversation in case
of, there,
mind
yeah.
you what, it's Trump 2.0 now. We don't have to be careful.
Yeah,
about this
it's
stuff.
Over now. We
Nobody
know
cares.
That the world
like
is the, balanced.
Yeah, everything's come back into. We forget about work is totally broke now.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have real balls and you think you have real balls, just try and do 15 minutes of stand-up.
100%. Especially if you think you're funny.
But even if someone else writes your stuff, delivering it is the hard part. And I will admit straight up, like sometimes just whether you've got a microphone in your hand, you have to say some things. Sometimes I've been lucky and I've been able to hit. I've never called myself a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
I would shit myself if I had to do that. And you guys, and we have a lot of talented comedians in this country, so I've got to give credit to everyone. I've had a few of them here. Unfortunately, you know, most of the time I have comedians on the show that come in and talk about how mentally ill they are. Yeah, they do. They come here and they're sad, and I'm like, Did we just book a comedian to make everybody depressed?
Yeah, no, exactly. I feel like there is such a thing as a happy comedian. No, there has to be because I am one. And
yeah,
I truly believe we're supposed to bring joy. You know, at the end of the day, that's our job. But you're right, it is a baptism by fire. And I think it can lead to so many different avenues. And that's how I got into the TV thing. It led me to theater, it led me to do children's
So what
work.
Did you actually get the SAFTA for?
It's the best structured or docu-reality series. So it's a show called Rent a Race. We had a bit of a laugh about it a while ago because I'm the construction specialist on the show.
So you had nothing front of camera to do here?
No, I did. So there's a whole construction crew. Let me tell you the story. Okay, so it's called Renderings.
What did you win this? Is this a bullshit thing? Are you telling me you didn't get this
picture?
After?
I've got the picture of the award in my hand, so please, nobody can take this away from me. Don't take this away from me, guys.
Yeah, but I mean, I can hold up a fake Oscar and say awards. I mean, it doesn't mean
no,
I
this one was heavy. I felt the gold.
Who's got the actual award?
Our director. His name is Ed Conry. Mm-hmm. And so essentially it's a construction show. We rebuild people's houses.
I've seen that. It's a CakeNet show, right?
SABC One. So Henk is on CakeNet. It's called Pachachut and Track. That's the show that he's on.
Right.
But the same guy who's a presenter on that, he's also our director.
Okay.
So this is on SABC One, so black people only. That's actually what they needed. They needed a good-looking black guy to play the lead role.
That's so clever.
It's so funny. Our set is amazing because it's like all these Afrikaans, like gay men behind the camera, and then it's us, and then it's all these guys from all over the southern South Africa because construction work workers are not just South African, Zimbabweans, Shona people.
Yeah.
So that set is actually so truly incredible to be on all the time.
Like
honestly.
That's when the diversity of people should be having an orgasm.
Yeah,
right?
We really do, man. Yeah. The language exchanges, the ek praat 'n bietjie Afrikaans ook, you know, ek probeer maar net.
Okay, so this is like a renovation show.
A renovation
hence
show.
Reno race.
Yes. Gotcha. So the race part is that we have 7 days to renovate the house. So we'll come on the first day and the last day. Well, I'll come on the first day and the last day. The three of us presenters, myself.
Yeah, it's not like you're actually hammering shit.
I am.
Really?
I actually do the stuff. It's
just for camera
or
for real?
Just for camera, honestly. But I do it. I actually do it. So one of the most interesting things is like I've taken out a bath and replaced it with a shower. Literally had to brick it out.
So you've basically done what every other South African has had to do, except you didn't have to pay for it.
Yeah, basically Cashflow paid for it.
Yeah, because let me tell you, doing house renovations is not fun for
it's
most of us,
easy.
Markham.
No,
we fucking hate it. I'll tell you why. Because we're doing all that stuff ourselves, and then we sometimes don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And it costs us money.
100%. And if you fuck it up, it's all you.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, so that's actually one of my favorite parts about it. It's like, let's say I have to angle grind the shower, let's say. But there's only certain points where I really am, I can do it competently. Then the real guy has to
take
it.
They let you loose with an angle grind.
They do, Gareth. They do. Risk takers, these TV makers.
You say I gave you a break in entertainment, but I wouldn't trust you in angle grinding.
Yeah, I always worry, but I'm like, nah, it's fine. I've been here for 3 seasons now, so this is the third year I'm on it. So I actually am a specialist, guys.
All right.
Comedian, construction specialist.
I think you've told me all of this before, but it was so boring I forgot.
It was the first season. That was the first time I was on. And it was boring then, but then obviously we've won the SAFTA now. Now it's the best show on TV. But it's a truly incredible experience because I actually do learn the stuff and I actually do get to do it. But often I'll do something and then halfway through, it's not looking as it should. I'll be like, okay, you guys take over. I'm sure we got the shot.
Okay, no, well done.
So I do it, but kind of.
So I heard you got mugged the other day in Melville. Is this true?
What a segue.
It happens to all of us in South Africa. This is very relatable. This is the kind of story people use on those late night talk shows to show that they're ordinary people too. But Melville, you should have known better.
I mean, I had a show there, so I had to go. But on that note, I always say one of my jokes is like, in South Africa, nobody helps you when you're getting mugged.
No.
It's just your turn.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. So it was my turn, Gareth.
What did they take?
My cell phone, brand new cell phone as well. I just got it upgraded.
What was it? What kind?
It was a Vivo 2.7e. So
that's a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's not an iPhone. Sorry, people, like, to disappoint you. I've got Android.
In fact,
Android is like a disease.
In fact,
Android.
I'm pretty sure that your muggers are very disappointed.
Like,
they're like, oh, what a cheap, nasty thing this is. They would have given it back probably if you just waited there.
Yeah, probably.
Did they use knives, guns? What was?
No, it was the car thing. I think I'm sure you've heard about it where they're driving past. So this is what happened. We did the show. Show was amazing. Yeah. And then afterwards we went to Smoking Kills. And just outside as we were leaving, my friend was doing magic. His name is Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a great trick that I like to video. And you know, I'm such an ear.
You're sure
like,
he wasn't distracting you and he was part of the mugging?
Maybe. Magicians are dodging people.
I gotta tell you, like, these syndicates, man. I mean, they've got people on the inside. You think he's your friend and he's like, watch this magic trick while I'm busy distracting you.
And funny thing is, he was stealing somebody's watch.
There we go.
But then the guy came from behind me, grabbed the phone, and then he went and was like, sorry, you try to catch the guy. He came back to him. sorry, I was actually stealing your watch, but somebody was actually really stealing my friend's phone. And it was so quick, Gareth, that it happened within like 3 seconds and he was gone. So, yeah, it's a bit of a bummer.
You know, you have a way of telling a very horrible story about being mugged, which would be traumatic for most people. You have a way of telling these stories, and I don't feel sorry for you.
Because you shouldn't, man. I was having the time of my life. I have such a good life. That shit doesn't matter to me, man. Like, honestly, a cell phone is nothing. Because, I mean, like, it was a good night. It's only after the phone was gone we're like, let's go have another tequila.
What else are you going to do, right?
Exactly.
Mark and Glulie's with us. We've got a lot to get through this morning, and I do want to do a little bit of sport. Have we got Ben on the line? All right, let's go to that and see. Well, Ben, where are you that you are so important that you can't be here today? What are you up to? Oh, holding golf. Trophies. How did I know?
This is the biannual playing of the Royal Rumble, and my team is the defending champions. I'm the captain of the team, and that is where we are today.
All right, is that a real trophy? Like you won that last year, or?
Yeah, it's a real trophy. It's got our names on it. We won in 2018 and 2022, so every 2 years, it's a really big deal.
Very well done. You see, Mark and Glulie, that's what a real trophy looks like.
It doesn't look as heavy as the Safta. I won't lie. It looks light.
Your name's not in the fucking Safta, is it?
No, well, my TV show is. Come on.
All right, Ben, so tell us what this is.
So every 2 years, because, you know, all my friends had wives and kids and all those kind of things. They can't play as much golf. We play it every 2 years, and it's our version of the Ryder Cup. So we get the red team, which is my team, which is a very good team. It's a very good week to be a red team.
And yeah. Yes.
And we're playing against the blue team, who will be ever called Kamala's Queefs this week.
All right, Ben, give us a rundown of the sport that we can look forward to this weekend.
Hey guys, look, apart from the Royal Rumble, the Bucks are back. They're playing Scotland on Sunday. The team will only be announced this afternoon, though. So normally we announce really early in the week. But because there's been some injury issues, Rodon O'Keefe is no longer playing. He's out of the tour completely. Russ is going to name the team, I think, 4 o'clock today. But it's going to be a really good test match because, obviously, it's our first test match after a little break. It's our first test match on the autumn international series. The Bucks are going to be too strong, but those Scots are plucky. And they're very plucky in Murrayfield. You know, they've got a lot of confidence. They beat the sort of weakened Fijian team last week by a very handsome margin. But I wouldn't look for too much other than the Bucks by 25 on that one. But tonight, if you love rugby, tonight's a good one. Ireland, the serial self-proclaimed world champion, they're taking on New Zealand. New Zealand are going to be without Cody Taylor, their hooker, their talismanic hooker, and Beauden Barrett. So I don't think the New Zealand team was going to be good enough full strength. They certainly won't be good enough with them out of the mix. So I expect the Irish to win that one. And then other games, well, Saturday, England, Australia, that's going to be a goodie. Italy versus Argentina. And France will be taking on Japan. So it's just the best month of rugby outside of a World Cup, because all these big strength versus strength teams taking place, all these games, and all in the lack of time zone of our one as well. So, I mean, it's an absolute win. Tonight, if you do like cricket, India are here. They're here for a 4 T20 series. If you do care, or if you can think back long enough, they obviously beat us in the T20 World Cup when we choked the living fuck out of it in the West Indies. So tonight, Durban, yep. Things still happen in Durban. That'll be the first game, SA versus India. It's exciting because it's the start of a very good summer, which starts with the Indian series and ends with the SA20. So we pretty much have flat-out cricket now until deep into February. So, I mean, if you've been starved of cricket or you want to get back into cricket, this is the time. This is the time. But the big one, guys, the big one. English Premier League, right?
Yep.
Now, we know that Liverpool's got a very good lead, and James is particularly smug right now. They just go from strength to strength. Everyone's played 10 games. And Arsenal, in their title-defying season, have completely fucked it up already. I think they're very lost. No, I mean, it's like I, as an Arsenal fan, I can say it, and it really doesn't grate my balls. But they've done really badly, and they lost again this week. They lost to Inter Milan in the European Champions League. And Man United fans, before you get excited about winning in Europe, you guys basically beat like a Greek fishing town last night. So don't come in with the, oh, well, we win in Europe bullshit. There's only one Europe, okay? It's the Champions League. You're not in Europe. You're basically just having tour matches. So the big ones to look out for the English Premier League this weekend, of course, Man City also lost last week, and they also lost in Europe this week. So they're looking to bounce back very hard against Brighton. That'll be at 7:30 on Saturday. Liverpool versus Aston Villa. Aston Villa have been phenomenal in the Champions League this year. Playing against, well, going against all expectations, really. So Liverpool will be at home against them on Saturday at 10. Spurs, they're taking on Ipswich at 4 on Sunday. United will be playing Leicester, if you're interested in that, at 4 as well. But the big, big game, Chelsea versus Arsenal at 6:30. So Arsenal have the captain back. Chelsea had a good start to the season. Then they played against actual decent teams and they sort of plateaued a little bit. That's going to be a bloody good game. And obviously on the Bounce Show, we have bets on that because I'm an Arsenal fan. Sandile is a crying Man United fan. And our guest this week was Cook, the Chelsea fan. So there's only one problem with that game is that it's at the same time the Box are playing. The Box kick off at 6 o'clock on Sunday. Arsenal-Chelsea 6:30 on Sunday. So I would recommend going to a sports bar, going somewhere with a dual screen kind of thing, because I think it's both going to be hugely interesting. And so much goes on that, you know, if Arsenal lose this game, I'm pretty sure it's out of the title season already. I mean, they could already be out of the title run, but it's so early and there's so much pressure. Chelsea are just having a jolt this season, you know. They were just basically a meme team for all of preseason, even still they are now. So they're happy. They're kind of where Arsenal was about three seasons ago. But Arsenal got the expectations. They have to deliver. Arteta's been there for ages. He's won fuck all. And he doesn't even have a Royal Rumble trophy. He's got nothing. huge expectations on their massive stakes. And finally, in the golf is the HSBC Championship in Abu Dhabi. It's the penultimate tournament of the DP World Tour, which concludes next week in Dubai.
Uh-huh.
So star-studded field, the best of the best from most of the world outside of like the kind of big yanks. So that's Abu Dhabi. Played at Yas Links, which I say that it is really, really beautiful in Abu Dhabi on Yas Island. So that's pretty much the whirlwind of your sport. Yeah, look out for that Box team announcement today at 4 o'clock, I think, South African time. But yeah, Russ is going to go balls to the walls in this one. He's going to get all three of those teams a proper dicking. And yeah, I'm just so excited. It's November.
All right, well, I love it. Good luck to you today. And I hope you're going to have so much winning that you can't handle any winning anymore. It's going to be the greatest week, tremendous week, unbelievable.
Yeah,
very good.
I mean, I didn't even know if I'm going to play that well because the trophy just naturally sits on me. Look at it.
Yeah. He's holding it like a baby.
There are a lot of very rude comments about your, in inverted commas, ugly-ass trophy. But I notice it comes from people who don't have any trophies, so don't worry about it.
Always.
It's a golfer. I mean, I don't know what you want. It's a golfer.
Yeah,
trophy. Basically,
yeah.
Basically, if the Ryder Cup had pizzazz, what are you talking about?
All right. Thank you, Ben. Very good. There's Ben. Live from a golf course, an undisclosed location somewhere in South Africa, about to thrash the blue team, who he's decided are what? Carmela's Queefs.
Carmela's Queefs. That sounds like a quiz night name.
Shame. Poor Carmela Harris. It's the last you'll ever see or hear from her.
I'm glad.
She's gone.
I'm glad.
She's
That's gone. The shadiest woman I've ever seen in my life.
Like, really? You didn't like her?
No, not at all. Not from the beginning. Like, I followed the U.S. election.
But you had to. Barack Obama said, if you're a black man and you don't support Kamala,
exactly.
Then you are a misogynist and a sexist, right?
Exactly. So
you know what we learned? You know what we learned in this election?
What?
Don't fucking tell black men what to do.
Anybody, for that matter. I don't give a shit what color your skin is.
Especially African-American men don't want to be told somebody what to do,
yeah,
all right?
Exactly. So I followed it until the assassination attempt, and I'm like, this is where it's peaked. Now I just have to find out who wins, because after the assassination attempt, I'm like, it's not going to get better than this.
What
somebody
a show,
either
dude.
Has to die or
what a show. We had an old vegetable who was replaced by a woman who had no personality at all. We had a guy who was like, they tried to kill him three times.
Yeah.
We had people in the media just calling, like saying, "Whoa, it's Hitler!" at one moment, and then the next bunch of people saying, "This guy's going to save the universe." We've got like the Rocket Man, the true Rocket Man, landing fucking spaceships between chopsticks, and then throwing his support behind Donald Trump. We had podcasters. We had this has just been the most insane election ever.
It
I don't
has
think
been.
Anybody can say that there would be a more entertaining election than this, no matter how long they live.
And the fact that it was Donald Trump coming back. Like, if it was anybody else, even with the assassination attempts and all that, it was like, no, it's this man that you guys all said was a piece of shit, and then he came back and you voted him in again. Unreal. So there's obviously a discrepancy about what you guys believe, you know?
Well, and I mean, a lot of people are not dealing with this. Can I share some meltdowns with you this morning?
Yeah,
all right,
do.
So we got a couple of meltdowns here. I just want to start off with that woman who throws a temper tantrum. So this girl, she's being filmed by, I don't know if it's a husband, boyfriend, concerned other, whoever this is. This is her reaction to the fact that Trump wins. And I mean, I think some people are really, really struggling with this, and not in a safe way. Just watch this complete fucking lunatic.
Oh, wow.
Okay, take a look at this.
Woke up this morning feeling spicy. You guys feel spicy? Because I do. All right. I don't know how to use this thing. Let's see what happens. Is this cutting off hair? I think I'm going to have to cut it shorter than that. Does it down, right? I think that this is too... Oh, it's getting hair. Let's see here. Maybe I got to cut it. Here we go. Have I given up on America? Yeah. Also given up on coloring this hair because, right? Fuck coloring my hair. Fuck having my hair be long and luxurious. Fuck all that shit. Fuck being skinny. Fuck being hot. Fuck being all the things that the patriarchy wants us to be. Because clearly, they don't give a shit about us. And
what's the hate with being hot?
She's shaving her hair off. I mean, listen. She's never been hot. She's never been skinny. So I don't know what she's talking about there. But good luck to you, honey. I mean, to do this because of an election result. I mean, I can't... I'm into politics. But if Kamala had won, my life would carry on. I said this on Wednesday.
Yeah.
These people are clearly not stable. Here's a very unstable one. This is the one who throws herself around the room. Unreal what's going on in some people's heads. Dark places, man.
Mm. And especially on the left in America.
Well, of course. I mean, you don't see this happen when you know the Republicans lose.
Mm.
You don't see people like throwing themselves against the wall. Look at this chick.
It's delusion. She
what the hell?
Ah, no. This guy's an actor.
Yeah.
This guy deserves an Oscar.
Mm. Yeah. Nah. I don't know. Like, some of them, it almost looks like they're acting. But that was a chick, right?
I have no idea. You don't even know. Maybe people should have a sign about what your pronoun is these days. Cause now,
no.
If I say you're a man, I'm a dick, apparently.
Not anymore.
Yeah,
those days are over.
Not anymore.
You don't have to worry about that anymore.
Right.
You can be as fun as you want to be. And people must just have grow up and get some stones.
Exactly, man. The world is so big and has so much going on.
Third time lucky, James. Maybe we'll show the clip that I spoke about the first time. Let's see if we can do this. Here we go.
Hell on earth. She runs. She so deserves that.
Whoa.
She so deserves that. Hell on earth in her air-conditioned house. Apparently,
but
this is hell on earth.
Like literally throwing herself against the walls and shit. And by the way, I mean, there's so many. You've probably seen all the others, but those three in particular, I thought I'd draw on the fact that there is a serious problem with people's mental health in America.
Hysteria. And I think cell phones have a lot to do with it.
Yeah, like, there's an attention-seeking component.
Yeah, that guy who was screaming, or that girl, or whatever that was, that person who was screaming would not behave like that at school. If they found out, like, okay, Trump just won, you wouldn't just go up in the classroom and be like, no, bro, you'd have to sit down, maybe go cry in the corner at lunch, but not like that. But your cell phone just allows you to be anything, and unfortunately, people choose to be crazy.
It's bizarre. We talked on Wednesday's show, or even on Monday, about how all these celebrities say they're going to leave the U.S., right?
Oh, yeah?
And they're going to get out. They're never going to come back. And one of the people we spoke about was Barbara Streisand.
Okay.
And producer Flex found these pictures of, like, her house in Malibu. And she's got a great life, right? And she keeps on, like, every time she needs more millions of dollars, she just says, I'm going to do another tour and it'll be my final farewell tour. But she's done like 28 of them. Mm. And Barbara Streisand is like having a meltdown. Eventually she tweets this. I don't know. Like, they should just keep her off of social media. In fact, if their friends and family really cared about them, all of these people that we've just played for you now, all the celebrities who are like having meltdowns, someone should say to them, just let me take your phone away and you just chill for a little bit. You know, maybe take some calming meds and just chill. It'll all be fine. Like 2 days' time, you'll go back to your normal life. Barbara Streisand's not going to move. Look at what she tweets. She tweets, there are no words. And then there's a community note that says, actually, Barbara, there are an estimated 1,022,000 words in the English language. Therefore, there are about 1.021995 words left. Isn't that great? I just love that. The community notes are the best thing ever.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely. I don't even know that started to happen because I've been off Twitter for so long. And are you back on it?
A little bit.
A little bit. Do you actually tweet?
I am. I'm just, especially now. I mean, with the elections.
Why did you go back? Because I knew you were off.
I decided it would be fun too. And really? I'm having fun. Like, I don't ever read the comments. I couldn't care less.
Okay.
I don't, once I post something, it goes up. I don't even see. Unless I go and look for stuff, I'm not going to find it. So I just put stuff out. If people want to read it, they want to laugh, they want to join in the fun. And most of it is fun.
Yeah.
Then come on down. By the way, let's just, before we take a break, let's just talk about the EFF because we haven't spoken about local politics at all. Everyone is jumping ship. Eventually, it's going to be Julius, Buyiseni, and Carl Niehaus. That's all they got left. It's going to be the economic freedom fighter.
I mean, but why wouldn't they jump?
It's going to be one. I'm like, I like these guys. They're not going to have enough people to fill the seats in parliament that they
actually won.
Actually have, which is like only a handful.
Mm-mm-mm.
I kind of feel sorry for Julius. They're all leaving.
But
in
why
droves.
Wouldn't they? I think they've run out of gas. Their petrol tank is empty. They're on the side of the road. There's nobody there to help them. They just
broken down Skorokoro.
Yeah, I think he lost the motivation of the people to vote. He was using the anger. He was using the past. And as much as people were angry, eventually they realized, my life is actually okay.
I almost feel like I need to call him up and take him out for a drink or something.
So how do you feel? He must lie down on this couch. Guys. Yeah, so how does this make you feel?
I sort of want to reach out just from human to human. We disagree on lots of things, but Julius, he doesn't deserve all of this betrayal.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
there was
a moment. You know?
He had a moment in time, and I think he's also a great leader, which is part of his problem, is that he's almost too good to
clearly
not lead, but then
I'm just saying, it doesn't look like it. If you're such a great husband, how come your wife keeps leaving you? No, it's very
okay,
bad.
Okay, maybe great leader is the wrong word to use, but I don't think he's a complete idiot like a lot of people have labeled him to be. And he didn't have a plan for this part of the election process and the GNU and what's happened now. I don't think he's ever really known what he was going to do.
Well, I posted a thing yesterday, a serious question. I said, you know, who's still in the economic freedom fighters? Because it seems like the parties, Dalimpofu's left and Floyd Chibambu's
left. So they're all going to the
MK, right? Yeah, but I mean, you know, they're also idiots because they're going to join a party that as soon as Jacob Zuma dies, and he's not looking great and he's a very old man.
He's Stefano De Mera, that guy.
You reckon?
Even if he
and
dies,
he's got good muti.
He'll come back.
He's got good muti. But even if he lasts longer than he should, when he eventually goes, because he is mortal, then the whole thing, the reason for MK to exist, disappears, and all of these people will be like, what's the central tent peg that we were all dancing around again?
I think it's the Zulu tribalism, to be honest. That's what the MK is going to base itself
on. King Miso Zulu has a problem with you that he's just messaged me about now, so you better take that up with him. talk about the Zulus without talking about the king.
Yeah, I'm going to get assassinated as soon as I leave here, bro.
Mm-hmm.
No, those are my people. Protect me.
Mm. We'll see.
No,
right.
But honestly, I think the MK is centered around tribalism, and that's where they're going to get their power, regardless of Jacob Zuma. That whole energy is what drives their whole agenda.
Hey, good luck to them. Good luck to the EFF. I won't pretend I'm sad that it's all falling apart for them, but we will see. We've still got a lot of time before the election. Yeah. We still don't know who, who's going to be in what party by then. It's a lot of floor crossing.
I'm actually. It's interesting that we changed our government this election. I'm actually more interested in the next one, because does this give the ANC any more credibility and validation? So does that mean we're going to go back and vote for them again because they managed to do something with the GNU, or are we going to continue to remember how much damage they did and be like, let's vote for them even less? So I don't know. It's it's very interesting time.
We will see. It's a great time to be alive. Yeah. This is the greatest.
What
time.
A movie! Every 20, day, you
2024, ladies and gentlemen, it's delivering bucket loads. Yeah, all right, so we will speak to you in a moment. We'll get on with the show in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Mark Mdluli's here with us. We'll also get to some of the fun. I have some hilarious stuff to show you that the internet has been also just delivering.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Stop.
What a week!
It doesn't stop.
Don't go anywhere.